And here we are, Spring Creek Golf Course, one of the most picturesque settings that I have ever broadcast from. Was here last year and a lot this year as well. We welcome to the program today David Murata, the president of Murata Management. And we're talking about dealing with market volatility. David Murata, welcome to the Shilling Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, here today, and you know, this is interesting. I used to be the sort of person that I described earlier who every single day, you know, if the market went up, oh, it's, you know, it's, I made $200, the market, goodness, it's down to, you know, and I would get on this roller coaster ride, and I don't know, maybe it was just don't do that anymore. I don't feel a need to do that. I don't even want to do that. I quarterly when I receive some statements, and that's about it. And so we have this market volatility. What is a volatile market? Is there something that we use as a benchmark? How you feel?
Yeah, the most important thing to use as a benchmark is past markets. So you just look at what's happened in history, feel for the markets. And what most people don't realize is how volatile the markets are. They kind of know that volatility happens. Happening, they think, well, this is an unusual event. And just knowing how frequently events can help provide some calm in the midst of the markets. So I usually recommend just look every day, look at how your portfolio did today, last 30 years. And that way you've got some perspective of the long-term growth in markets. So as say the S&P 500 was down about 7.97% from the high, which happened back on May 21st. The high was 2130 on the S&P 500. In fact, in the S&P 500, it hit 2100, which was a new high back in February. And since hitting that high, I think it's crossed 2100 once on the way up, and then once on the way down, and then once on the way up. Total, I think it's crossed it 32 times, and now it's back below 2100. All we know for 2100 some odd number of times, and at some point end on the high side and continue its upward trend. That's unusual, crossing a single line 32 times. Actually, the times the S&P 500 crosses any line is 35 times, so it sounds like we've got about times, maybe once on the way up and then once on the way down again and then one more on the way up, just to be average. And if this is a time above average, then perhaps it'll cross it even more.
We're talking with David Murata, concept of market volatility and how to deal with it. I think a lot of this has to do also with just psychology. And I know you're not a psychologist, at least I don't think you studied that. But I would imagine being in the business you're in that you have to deal with the human element of to people. So why is it that most of us, if that's true, are so bothered by this?
Yeah, our brains are wired for a lot of things that we function with in life every day, and one of them is to avoid and get out of situations that cause pain. And so when the markets go down, there's about 2.5 as the joy of which when they go up. And that is a part of just investor psychology. It's wired. We experience loss. And so when we measure loss, we always measure it from the high water mark. And so we always think, well, my goodness, how much is the market down and how much I've lost? And especially since we have most of our in investable assets in a 401k and our retirement, very retirement depends on it's difficult for us to experience that loss. So if you've amassed, you know, even if you've amassed $300,000, a 10% down is a $30,000 loss. And that's like 6 months of income, people. And that just feels terrible, a 10% down turn in the markets. But it turns out, percent downturn in the markets happens about once per year, and that's a very common. It's called a correction. They even have a name for it, and a correction just means when market went up too much. Now it's got, and then it'll go back up, and the zigzagging of the markets on the way up is incredibly common. Down 5% happens about three times a year, so that's even more common. And at any point, you invest in the markets. On average, the markets are down about 10% from some prior high. So at any point you just choose to invest in the markets, the markets are already down and there are some loss on average. So actually our loss on average right now from our high is only 7.9, actually a better than average time in the markets from measuring the loss from a previous.
I want to talk about the concept of loss, because if you haven't sold anything and you never realize by selling it to take the gain. Is it, I mean, I could understand the values down, but loss, nor is there any gain until you realize it.
No, what I like to do is instead of high water mark, which is the most, the worst, absolutely worst investor psychological thing, that I always just try to measure back to the last time that the market was below its current value. Mm-hmm. So in other words, the market's been zigzagging around 2100. Now it closed at 1961. So when was the last time 1961 was a new high that had never been hit before? It turns out it's just 1.2 years ago. So wow. So all you've lost the last 1.2 years, it hasn't gone anywhere. And then I like to go back and try to measure, you know, what is my gain since I've been investing, which we keep track of. So it's very easy to do that and figure out how much I made even at these measures that are down.
So, again, we go back to, because I would imagine there are some people that it doesn't matter, even if they've made a little bit, if they were to realize their gain, the fact that they didn't grab it when it was way up on top there and they didn't sell at the point is going to be bothersome to them.
Yeah, and unfortunately with investology, the people who do get out of the markets because it's gone down, the market is a lot more than they currently are, so now the market's come back up. And so if they got out after the market went down, now they're in the data. If they get back in, they're getting back in at a rate that's actually higher than when they. And so they will have lost some of the recovery that the markets have already experienced. So it's easy to know when to get out. I always have 10 reasons why you should be out of the market. They're all in the back. And there are world troubles and political troubles and tax troubles and all kinds of that befall the world. But the truth of the matter is that there's great productivity in people working, and you get that when you're the company that's hiring them to work for you, and you're getting some of the earnings of that company. It's almost always better to be invested over any 30-year period. Who bought as much stocks as they could 30 years ago? And that's always true, even in the midst of a terrible market. It's always true that you've got a good 30-year investment that's done really well.
So you talk people having reason to get out of the market, and there are various things that they would do. Where is the refuge? You know, you put your money in the bank, and
right.
You know, there's almost interest being paid there. You know, some people might want to invest in property, but you know, people are concerned about the market. It seems that you know, there's really no real safe haven.
There is no, and it turns out that return follows risk. It's one of the sort of rules of investing. You can have high risk and poor return. That's just a bad investment you should never make. But you can also have high risk and good return and a set of investments such that the more risk you want to take, the better portfolio to that, but the more volatile it will be. And probably if you wanted to get the possible return you could ever get, you'd probably have 100% invested in emerging markets. Which right now people say, well, you know, emerging markets has done terrible the last few years. It has, but that's part of the volatility with emerging markets. Some years it's up 30, and then it's down 50, and you have to experience that kind of volatility. Most people feel more uncomfortable with that kind of volatility. It turns out when you do asset diversification, when you have a diversified portfolio, you invest in a lot of times don't move in sync with one another. And then you have buyer's regret because one thing has done really well, the S&P did over the last 3 years, and then something else has done really poorly, like resource stocks or energy stocks, because they're down a lot. And if you have that kind of diversification, it gives your portfolio a smoother return. See the big negative on resource stocks, and you see a big positive on the S&P 500, and you say, well, why invested 100% in the S&P 500? And then you turn around and you look at other things like 2000 to 2002, and then you'd say, well, why wasn't I invested more in resource stocks? Because that did well, and the stock market was declining for the S&P 500.
You had an actual date, you know, somebody really wanted to have gotten in at a certain date recently, that was the best date.
Yeah, the absolute best date that you, and this data is looking at the S&P 500 data, which goes back to 1950. The absolute best day to invest was March 9th, 2009. This was the bottom of the 2008 crash. And, you know, a lot of people throw the word crash around, and they mean a whole lot by it. A crash is defined as down more than 50%. So until more than 50%, you really shouldn't call it a crash. And we have had some crashes where the market's That's an occurrence. But at any rate, on March 9th, 2009, if you invested on that day, there was never a day you lost money. And a year later, the market was up 68.6%. Dropped below being up 51% ever again. So the markets recovered, and in just 1 year, you were doing well, and it would, you'd never see less than a 50% return again.
977-1070 is the phone number with David Murata. He's online at muratahonmoney.com, and we're dealing with the topic of market volatility. Continuing our live broadcast here at Spring Creek Show, and we'll be back right after this. Stay tuned. Here at beautiful Spring Creek Golf Course. We thank Good News for inviting us out and Spring Creek for their hospitality here today. As the Shilling Show continues with David Murata, we're talking about market volatility. 977-1070 is the phone number. If you have comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. And so I think, you know, everyone says, hey, I'd love to buy low and sell high. But the human condition with market volatility would seem that it almost happens the opposite way. It's got to be pretty hard to be a contrarian.
It does. Morningstar did a study because all of the mutual fund information is public information. So they did a study about mutual fund flows, and they found that mutual fund investors underperformed the very mutual funds they were invested in by 1.4%. And that came about because when the mutual fund went up, they put more money into it, and when the mutual fund went down, they took more money out of it. So they were doing the exact opposite of buying low and selling high. They would sell. They would be putting money in only after it had gone up. So they'd be buying high, and then they'd be bailing out after it went down. So yeah, the investor psychology is exactly like that. We were talking about the very best day you could possibly invest, which was October. The March 9th on 2009. Mm-hmm. That was the absolute best day you could invest. But, of course, that was a time at which people were bailing out of the markets. They were afraid the markets were going to go to zero, and they were just scared and running and panicked. And the interesting thing is that markets can never go to zero. And I think most people don't realize that. Because the minute the market starts going to zero, that means I can pull the pocket change out of my pocket and buy the entire S&P 500 and own the 500 largest companies in America. And long before my pocket change will buy it, people who are much richer than I am will be buying it, or they'll be taking over an entire company because the price has gone so low. So it meets resistance as soon as the market goes low enough that it's attractive enough to people who know what they're doing. And so you're right. Stocks are one of the few things that when they're on sale, people are more hesitant to buy. And when they're pricey, people are much more willing to purchase it.
So if the market could never go down to zero, it is a market after all. But there are fail-safes that they put in for volatility. There's some sort of – and you would know what the law is or what the rule is. I don't. But what is that, and is it really wise to interfere with the market?
Yeah, so here's how my grandfather, market maker, back in 1929, his banking degree is from March of 1929.
That sounds like an ominous
it is.
Year.
It is, and he was actually helping to make a market on Wall Street from 29 to 31 when he finally lost his job because of all the cutbacks. And his company helped make a market in one of the Dow components of the time. He was an accountant, just matching up the trades at the end of the day. And they made a market in newfangled technology called the American Can Company. They had this innovative idea of putting food in cans.
Wow.
Hadn't been done before.
Yeah.
And the way a market is made is one company who's a market maker, and every single company on the New York Stock Exchange has at least one company who's willing to make a market. For the S&P 500, there's like seven or eight companies who are making a market, and they're all competing with one another. And what they do is they have a price where if you want to buy it, they're willing to sell it to you for that price. And then they have a slightly lower price, or a slightly higher price, sorry, higher for the buy if you want to buy it, and lower for the sell if you want to sell it to them. And the difference between that is called the spread, and all the companies are competing on the spread. And if you're the only person who wants to sell, then they have to buy it, and they pull the stock, whatever it is, IBM, American Can Company. And then if you want to buy, then they have to sell you the stock out of their pool, and they have to keep a big enough pool to make a market at all times. And so they're always buying and selling stock if no one else wants to. So if there are more sellers than buyers, then they have to sell out of their pool, And then they're allowed to move their bid-ask spread down as long as there's more sellers than buyers. And if there's more buyers than sellers, then they move it up. So you could be the only one trading a stock, and you could keep moving that stock down. The more you want to sell your stock, the more it goes down, it goes down, it goes down, it goes down. If you're the only seller, it just keeps moving down. They can move it down by a certain amount every so many hundred shares. And then finally, the stock has gone so low that I wake up and say, my goodness, I've wanted to buy that stock, but now it's selling for half of its value. Now I'm willing to buy it, and now you sell and I buy, and the market maker's out of the equation. And then pretty soon, you're done selling, you've sold all your stock, but I'm continuing to buy, and now the market maker gradually moves it back up until I'm not willing to buy anymore. And so the market makers are always making a market that way, and they always are gradually moving the price up and down until it finds resistance, where there's more buyers than sellers, or there's more sellers than buyers, and that's a point at which they can stop moving it. So the difficulty is when people don't make a market. And so what happened in the flash crash, which happened recently, is the market started moving, and a lot of limit orders got triggered. And then what happened is, for all the exchange-traded funds, they couldn't figure out what the price is. And the way people figure out what the price is of all the stocks which comprise an ETF is that they will put in an offer. I'm willing to buy the stock. I know it's selling for $100 a share, but I'm willing to buy it for a nickel. And what they get back is, no, I won't sell it to you for a nickel. I'll sell it to you for 104. And that's how they know how much the stock is worth. Well, when all of the ETF market makers backed off from the market, what happened is some of those nickel limit orders actually got executed.
Wow.
And stuff that was selling for $100 a share got sold for a nickel. And the stock exchange realized that telling people to back off from the markets was a terrible idea, and they invalidated most of those nickel orders. But that's what happened in the flash crash. And they actually, some of the limit orders went through down 60%.
Somebody had a good day.
Somebody lost 40% of their money, and some little limit order that got put in actually got executed, but it was recharacterized to down to only 60%, down 60. So the best thing to do is to never put in a stop loss order to sell, because when the market's plunging like that, you don't actually know what the price is, and it's a terrible time to sell. And usually the markets recover about 40% of any sudden movement in the market pretty quickly. The best thing to do is to put in limit orders to buy. I'm willing to buy that for 70% of what it's trading at now. And that way, if you had a flash crash, you'd be the one buying instead of the one selling. That's a contrarian move. And if the markets go down 70%, then your limit order gets executed. And if they go down 60%, then you're kind of sad about it. But
you wish you
could have gotten in, a little bit lower. But yeah, the volatility in the markets, people are almost always putting in limit orders the wrong way. You should put in a limit order to sell above your current price. And you should put a limit order in to buy below your current price, and that's what being a contrarian means. And contrarians, who are always rebalancing their portfolios, on average make about 1.6% more than buy and hold. So if the average person is a buy and chase returns and losing 1.4%, and a contrarian is a buy and rebalance, which gets another 1.6, the difference in investor psychology is about 3% annually on the markets. And that 3% doesn't seem like a lot when the markets are down 50%. But it makes a lot of money over the long run.
So does the government or do the markets not also have a rule like if the market fell by 10%, they would suspend trading for a certain period of time? Whose rule is that and what is the rule?
Yeah, fortunately, that's not true. So long as the markets, and the markets are privately run in the United States,
okay.
They're regulated, but they're privately run. And so long as they think the markets are being executed properly according to their rules and a market is being made, they're willing to endure great volatility. So it's only when they think all the information is not available, or they think that there's the trading is going to be not according to the rules somehow, are they willing to do that. So for 9/11, they suspended trading primarily because of the volatility in the markets, but also just the volatility in the country. And when they brought those markets back online, they were certainly down a lot from where they were, but they were down a lot to reflect a different mood in what people thought stocks were worth. And that was a day of gradually bringing a stock online, letting it settle, bring another stock online, letting it settle, as the market makers were very quickly trying to find what was the right price, because they didn't have any prior pricing for many days, and so they weren't quite sure what the right price was. So they were moving the price around very quickly to try to figure out what was the right price that people were willing to buy and sell at. But China's the most ridiculous one. China somehow is trying to reassure its people that it will make sure that market volatility doesn't happen. And that just isn't true. You can't have a free market. A free market means it's free to float, and it should be free to float. And being free to float means it will find its correct value. And that's the most the best thing that you can do for free markets is to make sure that they float, and whatever people want to do, that's what they're reflected at. In most of the things, though, most investments are not liquid investments like the stock market, so they're not constantly being priced with a market. Imagine the real estate. If the real estate market was run, the stock market, everyone would have a price for which they would sell their house. Even if you would sell your house $1 million more than it is, you'd put that price out there, and then they'd have a price at which they'd buy every house in town, even if that price was $1. And then you'd know exactly what the bid-ask spread was on every single house in the market, and you'd know exactly what your house was worth. It would be worth the highest bid that anyone in town was willing to give you for your house. That's what your house is worth. And you can't get a dime more than it if you want to sell it today. And so that's the volatility of a liquid asset. And we only recommend you invest in liquid assets because you always know what they're worth.
977-1070 is the phone number. We have one segment left with David Murata. He's online at muratahonmoney.com. Ian's holding it down for us back at the studio as we continue this special live broadcast today from beautiful Spring Creek Golf Course for the Good News Jalen Prison Ministry annual golf event. The Shilling Show continues with David Murata and market volatility right after this. Broadcasting live from beautiful Spring Creek Golf Course today, we continue this hour with David Murata. Coming up in the next hour, Sheriff Chip Harding will be here with us on behalf of the Good News Jail and Prison Ministry. He's actually going getting some lunch right now, which is awfully kind of him, for me that is. And Uncle Eric Seitz will be here, and we've got a lot to talk about as we compare and contrast Christianity versus communism and the formerly Christian nation of the United States of America. Continuing with David Murata on the topic of market volatility, and my goodness, there's a lot to cover here in our remaining segment, David. So let's talk about the average drop after investing, what that is and what people, how they should really look at all of this.
Yeah, typically, you know, I recommend to a young person you should be saving and investing in the markets, and they put their first, you know, few thousand dollars into a Roth IRA, and inevitably it goes down. And, you know, and sometimes they say, well, that didn't work because the markets are bouncing around. It's very rare for you to put the money into the market and it for only to go up. In fact, we've had only about 40 or 50 days in which the market, you could put your money in the market and it would only go up, especially after it hit some new high. At any rate, so I took a look at all the days, every day you could invest since 1950, and I just took a look at what is the subsequent drop after that, the worst drop, so the worst day that would look absolutely terrible, and I found the average drop after investing was about 17.65%, which is huge. So you're going to, any day you decide to expect in the market, you will have a day in which it's down 17.65% on average. Half the time it'll be greater, half the time it'll be less. And the average time to reach that bottom, it turns out, is about 2.6 years, which is a lot longer than I thought it was before I did the study. Now, just to be clear, 2.6 years after your investment, the average up, the average amount your portfolio will be up will be 23%. But at some point, all that means is it doesn't hit exactly at 2.6 years, it hits all around it. At some point on average, you see 17%. You'll also probably see up 40%, but it's just going to bounce around a lot. And then I took a look at what's the average time to break even and never go below your portfolio investment. And the average time to break even and never go below your portfolio investment was 4.2 years, which again was a lot longer than I thought. And all that means is that sometimes you'll hit a 2008 and it will erase over a decade of investing and then it will come back up again. So sometimes it's 10 years, sometimes it's 12 years, sometimes it's even 13 years. In fact, the worst day you could ever invest and then ultimately break even was September 24th, 1968. Mm. Your investment would bounce around for 13.8 years without finally rising above its initial value for good on August 12th, 1982. So the 70s were just a time of investing when it was bouncing around a lot. Now, this is price-only investment. You were earning some dividends during that, but your capital gains would be zero 13 years later.
David, I think there's a perception that market volatility is increasing. Certainly, it seems like political volatility is increasing, and economic volatility seems to be increasing. Is it?
It turns out, no, it's actually not. What's been increasing recently is a little bit of currency valuation, which does make a big difference because everything is measured in dollars. And so when the dollar strengthens and weakens and strengthens and weakens because of, you know, sort of other things that are going on with the dollar, that makes the markets look a little bit more volatile. But even when you factor that in, the markets are not as volatile as they have been in historically. And when you look at politics around the world, the politics are not as bad as they have been historically. I know everyone likes to think that we live in, you know, the worst of all possible times, but you look at World War One, you look at World War Two, you look at other times in history when we've been particularly bad, and the markets just seem to roll all through that because people still have to earn a living, you know, people still have to eat, people still have to be productive, and we have a great capacity for productivity that you can be a part of when you invest in the markets.
What happens with market volatility, if this is even likely, if the dollar loses reserve currency status? Does that throw everything up in the air, and is that even likely?
The dollar having reserve currency status of the world certainly has some effects that I think help us. The dollar is particularly strong right now. But I think it could compete on its own even if the rest of the world's currencies were also things that people were investing in. Because currencies are just currencies, and they're a means of exchange. They're not a means of storing value. So, you know, even if we decided to transfer everything in jelly beans, it's who wants to keep jelly beans for more than a day when you're transferring them? You don't, because jelly beans don't have any intrinsic value. So people still want to exchange whatever they're exchanging for something else. And the something else ought to be something which generally has a return. Holding dollars always loses inflation every year, and no one should be holding dollars for long periods of time. And by long periods of time, what I actually mean is 5 years. Because 5 years is short-term investing. It takes 4.2 years just on average to break even. And so anything in under 5 years, you really shouldn't be invested in the markets. You should be invested in, at least not the stock market. You should be invested in the bond markets or cash because you need the money and you're going to be spending it. It turns out longer than 10 years is long-term investing, and you really ought to be in the markets. And somewhere between 5 and 10, we draw the line. We tend to draw it around 6 or 7 years is where we think you ought to be invested. But if you wanted to be conservative, you could go out to 10 years. And we get that from the study of what is the average time period for an initial investment to double in value such that it will never subsequently drop below that doubling. And that time period is about 12.1 years. Again, this is price only on the S&P 500, where it's just making 7.5%. About 3% more comes from dividends historically. But 12.1 years for doubling in value is a great indicator of that's a pretty good indicator that you should be invested in the markets. Now, the average return after 12.1 years is 152% because ultimately it might bounce down again to just doubling, just up 100%. So again, the average investment will be experienced more, but the worst case of when it will double and never go below that doubling again is 12.1 years.
I guess we have at least two guarantees in life, that the sun will rise and that the markets will be volatile.
Yes, and that volatility is a terrible thing when you're experiencing it on the downside, and it's a wonderful thing when you're experiencing it on the upside, but people experience the downside pain about 2.5 times more.
David Morata, thanks so much for being with us here today on The Shilling Show. Really a terrific conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me in such a beautiful setting.
And we will be back on the other side. You can visit David online, Morata, on money.com. We'll have Sheriff Chip Harding here with us. A little more information on the event. We're here today, the Good News Jail and Prison Ministry annual golf event. And then it's Uncle Eric Seitz. Stay tuned as The Shilling Show continues here on 1070 WINA.